Blog Talk Radio.
It is Sunday night, and that familiar slap of the bass means it's time for the weekend wrap, surveying the squared circle. Well, we're going to do things a little bit different tonight. First of all, let's congratulate John Scully. It's his wedding anniversary as well as a birthday celebration. So John is spending some time with his family and celebrating his marital union as well as his birthday. So we look forward to having Scully next week, and we hope that he's having a great time celebrating family and friends. With that being said, we're going to start out with something a little bit different tonight. Scully mentioned it last week that he was actually commentating for a Bare Knuckle League, but we're going to talk to JC. He's the director of operations for brand new Bare Knuckle boxing production. It's going to be on October 3rd. But get JC in here and talk a little bit about more how it started and how some of the, some of the regulations were relaxed and how this actually came about. So I'm going to connect with JC. We're going to be talking with the champ a little bit later on, as well as Jabron. So let's hook up with JC here and see what this is actually all about. Let's see, 2671. Okay. This company is actually, I believe, out of Colorado. I know he's on Central Time. Good afternoon, JC. How are you doing?
Good. How are you doing?
I am actually doing very well. Things are a little hot out here in California right now, but other than that, we're actually doing very well.
Good. Well, I'll tell you what, they're not so bad here in Chicago, but I think I'd rather be in California, to be honest with you.
Well, okay. You're actually are you based out of California, or are you based out of Colorado where you're having your first event?
We're actually based out of Illinois. We're based out of Chicago suburbs, and we have an establishment. We have an association, a corporation based out of Wyoming, where the October event's going to be. So we're actually, my day-to-day operations are out of here in Chicago.
Okay. Now, for a long time, bare-knuckle boxing has kind of been looked down upon, and I believe at one point it might have even been illegal here in the States. Can you tell me how you got past all of those regulations?
Well, you know what? To be honest, bare knuckle boxing has been illegal since 1889. So it's been illegal for a long time. And then Wyoming, the great state of Wyoming, was the first state to sanction it and legalize it. And there was an event there in June. And that's how it all started, to be honest with you. So there were pioneers in the business that went ahead and they tried to get this sport legalized because, it is a true gentleman sport. You know, that's how this whole thing started. That's how fighting started, before gloves and MMA and all that stuff. And so Wyoming was the first state to do it, and Mississippi has now done it, and there's other states that are pretty close to sanctioning it as well. So it's only going to spread.
Now, I know, you know, it might sound funny to, you know, the average layman, but one of the things, John Scully was actually a part of, I believe, a June 3rd telecast the presentation. And one of the things that he mentioned were how different it was for the people that were fighting to actually make contact with the human skull or wherever with their bare hands, and how a lot of them weren't used to that. Did you find was it an attraction as well as a distraction?
Oh, sure. I mean, if you're, you know, this is you know, essentially this is fighting to its core, right? So this is me and you, and it's fist to fist, and there's nothing in between fist and face. You're right. And so you're right. There have been some fighters in the past that have gone, yeah, listen, that's a little bit much. But the guys that we have on our roster are complete warriors. They're complete titans. These guys relish it. These guys called and said, you got to get me on. I want to call out this guy. Put me on against him. I would love, or put me on against her. You know, we have, you know, four women fighting as well in October and this fall. So it's, you know, these women and men, this is what they want. I mean, you obviously can't talk fighters into doing it. You know, they're their own men and women, right? So we haven't run into much resistance. I guess let me just summarize by saying that these men and women have said, I'm in. I don't know where I got to sign, but I'll sign and I'm in. And this fall is going to be an extravaganza, I'll tell you that.
Now, you know, I do a boxing show, but I do appreciate fighting and combat arts. And I noticed that one of the gentlemen that has signed with you was Mr. Chris Lieberman. Now, anyone that has watched combat sports knows Chris Lieberman, knows his name, knows his reputation, and knows that this guy just likes to fight. How did you guys attract such a headline name, and can you tell us some of the other headliners that, you know, we might know or have heard of that have joined your organization?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, someone like Chris, you know, he did in his early career, you know, he was part of Team Quest, and he did the Ultimate Fighter, and then he was in the UFC in about 2005 to, you know, so he's been around the block. And and Chris won a retirement in 2014. He just wanted to focus on coaching out in San Diego. He did some Bellator stuff. And to be honest with you, when he contacted us, you know, we sort of had a mutual understanding, and he said, listen, I would come out of retirement for this. You know, he had some medical issues going on. They've all been cleared by his physicians. So when the Crippler was going to come back, you know, we thought, oh my, this is a major, major story for the MMA field. It's his major. So we took Chris right away. And we already had, and now that you mentioned other fighters, we already had Phil Baroni, right, the New York Badass. So, and his reputation has been long and distinguished. I mean, he's a beast. So we thought, what better to have as the co-main event to be Lieben and Baroni in a bare knuckle match, toe to toe? I mean, it was too perfect. And Phil is really excited about it, and Chris is really excited about it. I mean, we couldn't ask for a better matchup. You know, along those lines, you know, we have there's a YouTube sensation. He fights under a YouTube channel called Street Beefs. His name is Mighty Mouse. He's coming on to do things. We have the Beekeeper. He's coming on to do bare knuckle boxing. We have guys from across the pond in Europe coming, from France, from Italy, Cristiano Balsamo. We have women, Christina Marks. We have Jasmine Clarkson. We have a USA boxer, Tika Hemingway. You know, so we have, and that's just to name a few. I mean, we have probably over 110 to 115 fighters signed on our roster, and those are just some of the highlights that you're going to see this fall. And there's still more to come. We're not done yet. We are announcing people daily. So I would urge people just to stay tuned and hang on to your hats, because there's going to be some more big names coming soon.
You did mention four women, and you mentioned a couple of names just a minute ago, but it seems like, you know, I mean, women's boxing has certainly seemed to take a back seat to women's UFC, we seem to be a little bit more, let's say, forgiving to the women of UFC. And by forgiving, I'm talking about equal salary. I'm talking about 2-minute rounds instead of 3-minute rounds. Can you kind of give us a little format of the women's contest, and are they any different from the men's?
The best part about our organization here is that the women and the men are going to fight under the same rules. So they're going to be 5 2-minute rounds. So they're both fighting under the same rules. And to be honest with you, our women wouldn't want it any other way. I think, you know, when you're talking bare knuckle, when you're talking, you know, fist to head, fist to nose, fist to cheek, 2-minute rounds and 5 of those, that's a long time. You know, I can't say I would do it. So, the women are going to be involved in the same rules as the men are in our event in the fall and moving forward. That's not a test. It's not to see how it goes. The men and the women are going to perform in the exact same fashion.
Let's talk about the medical aspects of this. We always talk about, cuts in boxing and whatnot. And we do see, cuts in UFC, but when you're talking about bare knuckles, what are the medical situations like, or that you are anticipating during this? And are there strict rules as far as what type of astringents and blood clotting solutions that the trainers or cutmen are allowed to use?
Sure. Well, like in other sports, we're going to have cutmen. We're going to have physicians on the premises. We obviously also have paramedics on the premises. We'll have all of the necessary medical features and functions and requirements that the Wyoming MMA board requires. The bottom line is, you know, we are an organization that loves competition, right? We love the sport of bare knuckle boxing. We love it fundamentally. However, boxer safety is paramount to us. This is not a matter of, well, you know what you're getting into, and if you get hurt, you get hurt. That's not, you know, you knew the risks. Of course they do know the risks. And I think that's where we're different. The WBKFF has looked into getting medical treatment for these fighters, not only before the event, but after the event. Because before the event, you're fine. Your hands aren't broken. Your face isn't this, isn't that. Your nose is fine. But after the event, you know, to find an insurance company that'll provide insurance is really difficult, because there's some severe injuries that happen in this sport. And so we are looking into, at this point, providing all of our fighters on our roster medical insurance. I don't know when it's going to get done. I don't know if it's going to be done by the fall, but that's what we're looking for. I know it's, some people think you're out of your mind, it'll never happen, but you know what? I guess we never thought we would be where we're at. None of us were in the bare knuckle world until we threw it out there and we promoted the sport and we just, you know, we gave it a try. And that's what we're going to be doing, is finding a solution for these fighters after the event. You know, when we sign a fighter, we not only call them, congratulate them via email or text or whatever it may be, but there's always something that goes out and it says, welcome to the family. And that last word is very important. and we want to treat people as such. You know, if my son or my daughter gets hurt, you know, I don't just try to find the cheapest treatment as, you know, possible and hope everything's okay. No, that's my family. And so I want the best possible treatment. And I think that's how we want to portray ourselves to these fighters. And they believe us because we talk about that when we sign these people, men and women, that we want to do that. We even have gone so far as we're discussing at this point, you know, maybe even creating a 401k of some sort, because fighters don't get paid enough. Let's be honest. Whatever they're getting paid probably isn't enough. So we want to promote that. And you know what? There's life after fighting, and I don't want you to be an old man or an old woman that has these bruises and batter that never got treated properly, or they never got looked at, or they never – I don't want to look at them at that point and go, I could have done something about that, but I chose not to. So we are looking at all aspects of that, and I think that that's what makes us different than anybody else out there, to be honest.
And, you know, I mean, now I have to broach a subject that, you know, I know is, you know, maybe a little controversial, but once again, thinking about the safety of the fighters, what are your drug policies? Are there drug testing?
Absolutely. The drug testing we're going to have is going to be strictly followed by the laws that the Wyoming MMA board has set aside. And you know what, to be honest, each state, I think, has similar laws, if not the exact same. But yes, there will be. And this is not going to be, a free-for-all sort of whatever you can take. And no, I mean, these fighters, men and women, both have to go through drug testing, and they have to be screened, and they have to be cleared by doctors and physicians. You know, they're going to look at their past injuries and go, okay, I know you've been, you know, knocked out, or you've hurt this, that, and the other several times, the same injury. Well, we have to make sure that's okay as well. So when you see these fighters in the fall step into the ring, they've been cleared, they've been tested over and over again. This is not a one-time thing, or listen, just tell me verbally that you're okay. You're okay? Okay, let's get in the ring. We can't do it like that. So I don't want someone getting seriously injured in this. I don't want death occurring. I don't want any of that. I want a good, clean competition. I want people going at it going, you know what? That was a good, clean fight. It was a rough fight, but that was a good, clean fight. And so you're going to see clean athletes as well when they step in that ring.
Can you talk to us a little bit about the different weight classes the possible divisions?
Sure. The weight classes, the Wyoming MMA board has deemed weight classes very similar to boxing. So what will happen is, you know, there's a flyweight, there's a light heavyweight, there's heavyweight. So it's the same as boxing. We're gonna go by those standards. I don't think there's a reason to reinvent the wheel. You know, they're all within, you know, 5 or 8 pounds. So it's nothing like, you know, you don't have a 260-pound fighter fighting a 220-pound fighter. That's just the Wyoming MMA board has to see all of our fights prior to us putting on the event in the fall. They have to clear the fights. They have to see both fighters and go, that's a fair fight. Yes, between weight class and ability and skill, that's a fair fight. So, which is great, because I don't want to put something on TV that it's like, okay, that was a 10-second fight because it was a mismatch from the beginning. We all know who was going to win that fight. That's not healthy for the sport. That's not what we want to do. And so we're going to follow the guidelines that the MMA board in Wyoming has put out, as well as boxing. I think those are great. Those are great, and that fits perfectly with what we want to do.
Now, tell us a little bit about the ring. Is it going to be a standard ring? Do you have different types of rings? I mean, you know, like some rings are soft and some rings are a little bit bigger, and then you have some rings that are a phone booth. Is this going to be a ring type thing, an octagon? Exactly what is the format there?
We are, to keep it very simple, we're using a standard regulation boxing ring. I think, you know, maybe down the road we'll look into maybe something else possibly, but again, reinventing the wheel isn't something that we are, you know, interested in doing as far as the ring is concerned. I think a regular three-rope standard boxing ring does the trick. I think it's safe enough. I think it's been it's been that way since time immemorial. So, again, to reinvent the wheel would be silly. So we're going with a standard three-rope boxing ring.
Let's see. I know I've kind of grilled you a little bit here, but I've also, you know, I'm old enough to remember the Tough Man contests, and they were popular for a little while. How do you guys overcome, you know, the possible fact that the pure boxing fan or maybe the UFC fan would consider this just a novelty, a passing phase?
Well, you know what? You bring up a great point, and there's people that, listen, boxing has always been boxing from, you know, Sonny Liston and Muhammad Ali and all, I mean, and, you know, to Floyd and to Mike Tyson. You're right. And MMA has had their, I mean, the UFC and Bellator are extremely popular. I mean, there's no getting around that, and there's no sense of talking about how, you know, they're not. But we just feel like this is a format and that it brings it completely back down to how, I mean, organized fighting started. I mean, organized fighting didn't start with gloves and they didn't kick and they didn't bring you down to the ground. And when you were down to the ground, they, you know, they ground and pound you. They just didn't do that. It was just me and you. And if it was a street or whatever it was, a corner, and it was me and you with, you know, our fist, and that was it. And when you went down, that was it. The fight was over. If you can't continue, it's over. And so I feel like the traditionalists might appreciate this in that this format is the way it started, right? Boxing's been around for a long time, but boxing started after bare knuckle, right? I mean, they probably didn't call it bare knuckle, right, in the 1800s, but bare knuckle is how it started. It was just people fighting for honor and pride and I'm going to smack you with my glove. And when I do that, you know what that means. It's on. And I think we're bringing that back to the forefront. And I think people will appreciate the genuineness and the history of it. And there's just nothing like it. You know, we're not reinventing a new form of MMA where you can kick and jump kick. And there's no reason. Let's bring it back to how this started. And that's how people originally watched these, as bloody as they are and as violent sometimes as they are. But that's how it started. And it was popular then, and it kind of went away because it was safety concerns. But, you know, I think the nation and people like the state of Wyoming, and they've realized the importance of history and to bring that back and to honor it. And, you know, us in the organization are huge fans of, you know, the history of fighting. And this is where it all started. And we could bring this back and have a huge following, I think. And I think people will really, really enjoy it.
Now, let's talk a little bit about the judging and the referees. One of the things that, you know, we've talked about in boxing so much is how boxing judges have been sometimes appointed and don't really know the game. It's kind of a political thing. Are you guys still using a state of Colorado boxing officials, or do you have your own boxing officials? And where does that pool come from? And what about your referees?
So our referees, I can start there. Our referees, we are former UFC or Bellator referees, where they know the sport. The Wyoming MMA, for instance, we're going to be in Casper, Wyoming. So the Wyoming MMA board has a list of rules and regulations that these officials are familiar with, and they know what to look for. They know what's illegal. They know what's legal. So we are, and that goes as far, and the judges as well. So I shouldn't even leave the judges out of that. So it's going to be, you know, a standard, you know, three judge. It's going to be a standard one official in the ring. They're all going to be well-versed and professional as far as the rules and regulations that are set forth in the MMA state that we're in, the Wyoming MMA state. So particularly in Wyoming, you know, the rules vary. So, you know, if a judge is judging in Wyoming versus Georgia versus California, those rules could differ. So these judges and these referees will have definitely UFC and Bellator experience, but they're definitely not going to be rookies in this whole situation. The thing is, what's hard is, you know, bare knuckle's been illegal for a long time. So there's not a lot of referees that referee official, professional, sanctioned, legal bare knuckle events, right? So this just got started recently. So as the pay-per-views and the events go on, you know, these judges will sort of, you know, you'll on the, oh, this is a seasoned, you know, 5-10 year bare knuckle referee. So the rules are the same in that safety is important. You know, if someone's going down and they can't defend themselves in MMA and UFC and Bellator, okay, you have to make a judgment call on that. But in bare knuckle, you know, you can't go to the ground. When you punch someone or wherever you're going to punch someone and they hit the ground, you got to back off. The referee's got to do their job, get in there, look at a face, look at a, you know, a head, whatever the case is, and the judges have to do the same thing. So it's a little bit more, it's a little bit less subjective, where I don't feel like you can go on. I mean, this is going to be pretty apparent. A cut is a cut. Sometimes it's a little different with a glove or with a boxing glove, different. But with a knuckle to a face or knuckle to a temple, they're a little bit more severe, they're a little deeper, they're a little bit cleaner. And these judges and referees are going to be the best that you've seen. We have absolutely no issue with either of those coming up. We foresee no issue at all.
Do you have cutmen in the corners and the usual? I mean, you know, like you know, boxing, we have the officials standing on the ringside watching. You know, the substances and how the fighters are treated in between rounds. Are we going to see the same in bare knuckle?
Absolutely. You're going to have, you know, for sake of this conversation, a red corner and a blue corner. You're going to have a cut man in the red corner, a cut man in the blue corner. You're going to have a doctor on each side. You're going to have physicians sitting ringside. It's the exact same. We have to adhere, and I think, again, going back to, you know, fighter safety, that's what's best for them. That's what's fair. That's what the sport wants. That's what we want. So that's what we're going to do. Yes, they're going to be two cut men, two physicians on the side. We have to keep an eye on everything, and the cut men we are going to have are the best in the business, and same as the physicians, and they're well versed in. I mean, they've been in boxing and UFC and Bellator for many years. So it will be standard, same as boxing. Again, we don't want to start something new. We want to continue with what's been successful in the industries for however many years.
Finally, just as with everything else, we have to talk about price. I know, you know, most people can look online and see it, but why don't you tell us a little bit about the pricing? And, how many right now, how many events are you planning for 2018?
For 2018, we have one event planned for the rest of the remainder of the year, excuse me. It'll be in the fall of 2018. So that definitely will happen. It definitely will happen in Casper, Wyoming. We have that part set. In regards to the price, are you asking about price in regards to pay-per-view? Are you asking price in regards to ticketing at the event?
Both.
Okay. So we're working with a company as far as, you know, ticketing at the event at this point. We don't, honestly, there's no ticket prices published at this point. We're going through and doing research on, you know, what's going to obviously be the best for the fans. It's a fan. Without them, you know, we have nothing. So we want to make this as affordable as possible for the casual fan or the diehard fan. I don't want them to say, I wish I could go to that event. I'm not that far from Casper. I would drive in, but I just can't afford the tickets. They start at a price too high, even for an upper deck seat. We don't want that. We are a fan-driven company. We started as fans, right? So we went to these things, right? Not necessarily bare knuckle in the past, but we've been to MMA events and boxing events, and we know how it is to do that. So we want to make this as fan-friendly as possible. That's as far as the ticketing is concerned. As far as the pay-per-view, again, we want to make this as fan-friendly as possible. I understand that if you're in New York or Florida, you can't make it to Casper. We don't want to break the bank on that. We're not charging $69, $79, $59. We feel like, you know, that's a lot of money. I mean, $60, $70, $80. I don't know. I feel like that's a lot. I mean, I know you're going to get 3+ hours of action and some really, really good action, but we're trying to make this as fan friendly as possible. Like I said, so, there's actually to be completely official, there is no pricing at this point. However, the fact that those of us in this federation came as fans is no better, because we've been there, done that, and gone, I can't pay that. Or, you know what? That's a great price. I am going to watch that. We've been on both sides of that, all of us. So I'd rather be on the side of, that's an affordable price. These are great names. That's worth my money. And I think that's our goal, and that's what we want to bring to these fans each and every event, whether it's 5 events a year or one for the remaining of the year. I want to make it affordable and something that they're never going to forget.
Well, JC, thank you so much for your time, and we appreciate what you're trying to do for the sport as well as make inroads and innovations here. So why don't you tell everybody where they can find you guys on social media, and any final thoughts you have for our audience tonight.
Absolutely. You know what? I first want to say, you know, whoever is listening tonight, I cannot do this without you guys. And we need you. You know, we love having you guys around. And if you can make it out to Casper, it is going to be a fun. It is going to be an amazing weekend. We have our first ever Fandemonium, right? So it's a fan-based meet and greet with celebrities. We'll have Chris Cyborg there. We'll have the Diaz brothers there. We'll have Joe Stevenson there, among others that we, you know, that I got to leave something to surprise. So, you know, we think that it's going to be an amazing, amazing weekend. Please make it out. We are on Instagram at World BKFF. We're on Twitter and Facebook at WBKFF. We're on, like I said, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. We're on the internet. Look us up, WBKFF.com. We have our fighters up there. We have all the information. Please get a hold of us. Let us know what you guys think. We are finalizing a contract for an online pay-per-view service. We should have that done this week. It is going to be a amazing weekend, and it's an amazing time to be a part of it. And we would love everyone to do it and be a part of it and join in. And let's start a new revolution, because I feel like this is here, and it's staying, and it's not going away, and we couldn't be any prouder.
Well, thank you so much, JC, and we look forward to talking to you as soon as we get more information, and we look forward to being able to watch some of your presentations. So thank you so much.
You're welcome. It's been my pleasure. Anytime you need me on, you let me know. I'm here for everybody. Thank you guys so much for tonight.
Thank you. You have a great evening.
You as well. Take care, everybody.
Yeah. That was JC. That was JC, the director of operations for the World Bare Knuckle Boxing Federation. And we look forward to seeing their pay-per-view and seeing what this new aspect of the sport brings. But right now we're going to be talking with my great friend and brother from another mother, the former heavyweight champion of the world, Mr. Layman Brewster. Layman, how you doing tonight?
Hey, what's going on, JK?
Oh, man, hey. Like I said, Sunday, always looking forward to talking with you guys. We had some good action over the weekend. Of course, my man didn't quite come through for me, but since we have the former heavyweight champion of the world, let's start with Mr. Luis Ortiz. What did you think about the King Kong's performance in general?
Well, I think that it was a good fight for him to make his comeback. I think that with him, you know, coming off of a defeat like that over off of losing to Deontay Wilder. I think that was pretty much a safe fight for him to take to help him to get his confidence back. I just thought it was a great fight for his people. You know, as far as if I was his manager, that would be the fight because Rosvan, you know, he's a game dude. He can fight, and he's a big guy. He's got a pretty good record, and so I don't think they could have really picked a better fight for his comeback. And then to be on this card, which was a very exciting card, I think that was great because that puts him back in a good light, in a positive light. Not that it was a negative light because, as they were mentioning throughout the fight, that he was, I guess according to the official scorecard with the Wilder, he was up on points. So, I just thought it was a great fight for him all the way around.
Let's talk about the gentleman that he knocked out. We've seen guys handle, adversity different ways. But, do you think that perhaps he should have just, taken the knee? It seemed to be more of an equilibrium problem, but he was still trying to get up even though he couldn't. Is that a normal reflex or what, Lehman? I mean, you've hit guys just as hard, I'm assuming. So what does that do to your opponent?
Well, several things could have happened. Not only the equilibrium, but, it's almost like a concussion almost. And with the concussion, it kind of disorients you to an extent. And so, and just to let a little secret be known, I actually worked with Rosvan a couple of years back, probably about, it's been over since I've been here. So it's been about 6 years I was working with him at John Arthur's gym. Over in the valley in Los Angeles, and he was a very promising up-and-coming heavyweight. According to his record, he had a couple of losses since then. He was undefeated when I was working with him. I can't say what the actual feeling that he had going on. I mean, he did get caught with a really clean shot, and all the time, when you get hit by a guy that can really punch, and you go down, sometimes when you fall, you can even do more damage, especially if your head hits the canvas, which I don't really recall. But what I just remember was the instant replay where he went back and showed it, and he really just got caught with a good punch. Now, I do think that he, like I saw him trying to reach the rope, and then that was one mishap because he failed terribly to reach that rope to try to pull himself up. And then he fell again. So it does seem to appear that it was an equilibrium problem that he had going on. He was so dazed that he didn't maybe, with that experience. And then he just could have been too hurt to really to really recover enough. And so when they stopped the fight, after looking at it, I said, wow, okay, well, that was a good call on the behalf of the ref, because at the end of the day, you don't want the kid, the fighters in there that you are refereeing, you're in charge of their welfare. And if you think that they're too hurt, the best thing you can do is stop the fight to let them live to fight another day. So I think that it was a good stoppage, and I think that it was just a really good punch that they caught Rosvan, which is why he couldn't continue.
Let's talk about Mr. Ortiz, and I guess the elephant in the room. He got knocked out by Wilder. He's a dangerous puncher, but he's 39 years old. Lehman, do you honestly think that he's going to get another shot at the title?
I think he will, because there's not a lot of people out there to contest him getting another shot. There are not a lot of you know, you have a Big Baby and you have a Dylan White, you know, you have people like that, but there are not a whole lot of heavyweights that has a big name out there today, whereas he still has a big name, and age ain't nothing but a number because, as a matter of fact, when you get older, from my own personal opinion of being a now more mature fighter, it's all about fighting smarter. It's all about using your craft, your craftiness, using the tricks of the trade that you learn that puts you above the next fighter that you step in the ring with. It's not based on size or youth or anything like that. It's based upon how well you know the ring, how well you can control your opponent through your movement, how well you can make him make mistakes and make him pay for it. So at the end of the day, I don't blame it on the age, because age ain't nothing but a number, because some people reflexes don't go away, especially the heavyweight division, you know, like a guy like George Foreman, as you know, who defeated Michael Moore at the age of 45. So I'm not going to put it, I'm not going to say, oh, age. I'm going to say mentality. I'm going to say, let's look at his next few fights and see how he continues to mature or how he overcomes that obstacle of his defeat to Deontay Wilder, because I was curious to know how his confidence was going to be going into this particular fight after losing to Wilder like that, fighting another big guy like Rosvon. I didn't know if he would be a little gun shy, because I don't think he's ever been knocked out before. So to be knocked out and then to come back and put on a great performance, you know, that shows that he's a mentally sound guy, and we can look forward to something from him in the near future if given the opportunity.
But, okay, let's look at the landscape then, Raymond. We have Joshua fighting Povetkin. And then, you know, you mentioned Dillian White or you know, maybe someone else in the UK, because we know right now we more or less see him taking two fights in 2019 without fighting Deontay Wilder. You have Deontay Wilder fighting Dominic Brazil, since he's being shut out by Eddie Hearn and Joshua. So you have him with possibly two fights in 2019. Now you have a 40-year-old Luis Ortiz, and you still haven't had a fight between Joshua and Anthony Wilder. Does that make a difference?
When you say make a difference, who do you want it to make a difference for? Between the fans, between the champions, between the promoters, between the fighters that are underneath these guys?
Let's go with the fans and the promoters. Are they going to want to see another fight with Ortiz when they still haven't seen the biggest heavyweight fight this decade between Joshua and Wilder?
No, they're definitely going to want to see the fight between Wilder and Joshua, but you know, politics always is going to overrule sometimes two fighters getting in the ring in this case. So I really can't answer that. I think that the fans should definitely put pressure and speak out in Facebook and tweet and Instagram, you know, make this fight happen, put the pressure on Eddie Hearns, who we know he holds that key. If he wants his guys to fight, which I, you know what, and I'm just going to say, man, you know, and it's just my own personal opinion, I don't think that's a fight that Eddie Hearns is really, really looking for. I really don't. You know, Deontay Wilder is a very – yeah, yeah. Well,
they,
I don't know.
They turned
I, and I think,
$50 million. Yeah. You know,
you said what?
Everything the Wilder camp – tried to do, they've turned down. They turned down the $50 million. First, they said the contract was in the mail. I mean, come on. I think that's kind of given it at this particular time, at least. They have no, wants whatsoever to see Deontay Wilder in the ring. And I'm not, I'm not saying that, one fighter is afraid of another fighter, nothing like that. I'm just saying that right now, Eddie Hearns, we've seen this from Golden Boy and other promoters. You don't care, you cash cow. Why put him in a 50-50 fight when you can put him in a fight where it's 70 or 80% guaranteed that he should win?
Well, I agree with you. I said that a while back, that I said from a business standpoint, if Eddie Hearn was smart, he would try to protect his cash cow and Anthony Joshua as much as he could. And we were talking about what could Deontay Wilder do, and, we were making reference last week when I was saying that he should go ahead and take these fights with these gentlemen like Dominique Brazil, these type of guys, to keep him sharp and to keep his name relevant in the boxing, on the boxing scene, and to show that, let him keep putting it out there that he wants this fight, so that at least at the end of the day, people know, look, we cannot be mad at Wilder. We can't be mad at his handlers, because they're trying to make the fight. They want to make the fight, but everybody knows that Eddie Hearn, he is in control, and they know that. If they know boxing, they know that that Deontay Wilder can't do anything. His hands are tied until Eddie Hearn and Anthony Joshua come to the table and say, "Okay, we want this fight." And I think it's going to be very difficult for him, because all you're going to do is you're going to mess around and allow a dude like Deontay Wilder to get even that much more experience. Because here's the thing: the longer a man carries his title, the harder it's going to be to take it from him mentally, especially a hungry heavyweight like Deontay Wilder, feeling like he got something to prove, because everybody was riding the coattails so much of Anthony Joshua, and he's sitting here like, look, I'm from America. I went to the Olympics too, and this is the way you guys repay me. I fight who you say to fight. I beat who you say to beat, and you still jumping on this dude Anthony Joshua's bandwagon. And he's from England. And so I think that Wilder really has something that he wants to prove, or a statement he really wants to make. And then, to be honest, I think that Joshua knows in the back of his mind also that Wilder's the real deal. And he knows his weaknesses. He knows that he was exposed, and maybe even before that, he has trouble with boxers. I mean, there's no way that if you look at the fight, Vladimir was beating Anthony Joshua. And it's not to discredit him. I ain't no hater. But Klitschko was putting on a show. After he got up off the canvas, he really put on the clinic. And it looked like it was going to be a shutout until Joshua caught him. Now, I say that. Why? Because here we go. You got a guy like Vladimir Klitschko, 6'7". And then you got a guy in Klitschko who's 240 or whatnot, something like that, in that range when he fought Anthony Joshua. But then when you think back and you look back and break it down, well, okay, so Wilder is a little bit taller. Well, he's like 6'8", something like that. And he's 20 pounds smaller, and he's younger. So if Vladimir was able to do that to Anthony Joshua, wouldn't think with a guy like Deontay Wilder, who's going to be mad, who's going to be mean, who's going to be angry, who's going to be hungry, think about what he's going to do. So I think, rightfully so, those guys have every right in the world to be a little concerned, or a lot of concern, because Wilder can punch with both hands. He's a beast. He's not afraid to take a chance. And he truly is the definition of a true heavyweight champion. So I think that it's smart on the behalf of Eddie Hearn, from a business standpoint, to keep Joshua away, try to make that money over there on that side of the pond, and keep Deontay Wilder's name out of your mouth.
Let's talk a little bit about some of those things that you said about Anthony Joshua, because we've seen him fight, like you said, Klitschko at 240. We've seen him fight Parker at about 220. And he really looked slow and sluggish at 220. He looked a lot better at 240. But when you're fighting a guy like Deontay Wilder, what we, as a heavyweight and someone who's been in the ring, Layman, what weight would you come in to fight Deontay Wilder if you were Anthony Joshua? One seems too light, and the other one seems like it cuts down on his mobility. What are you thinking here?
Well, I'm going to just tell you, man, you cannot – okay, so let's look at it in the terms of two airplanes dogfighting. If you have a B-52 bomber and you load it up with all the atomic bombs and missiles and just everything you can put on that big old ship, and you fill it up and it's ready to destroy, that's fine and dandy. But Deontay Wilder is not a B-52 bomber. He's a F-16. He's going to maneuver around. He's going to use his footwork. He's going to use his range. He's going to fight you from angles. He's going to fight you from a distance. He's not going to fight you in a telephone booth, which is where the strength of a Joshua would be. The only chance that Joshua would have would be to be an aggressive fighter, which then he puts himself in jeopardy because he doesn't have the best defense because he has to walk in on a guy that could knock you out with one punch. But then at the same time, if he stands out there with a guy that can punch like that, you're standing at the end of a sword. So it's like, for him, styles make this fight, and his style does not match up well with a Deontay Wilder. Only way I see him beating Deontay is if Deontay makes a mistake and gets close and let his ego get in the way. Other than that, Deontay, I just believe he got Mark Breland in his corner, one of the best amateur fighters. He's a very smart professional fighter, very experienced guy in his corner. Can Joshua say the same? I mean, here's the thing. You cannot think for one second that muscle can be the brain. Because a brain is a muscle. It's just a different type of muscle. And that's one thing that I always admired the great Evander Holyfield. He said, these guys may be bigger than me. They may be stronger than me, but they got to be smarter than me. And I believe that with the team that a guy like Wilder has with Al Haymon, with Mark Breland, it's really going to be hard for him to go wrong because he knows the magnitude of this fight. And really the pressure is all going to be on Joshua, no matter what. If he fights here, if he falls, it doesn't matter. The pressure is going to be on Joshua to try to live up to the expectations of what everybody perceived him to be. But yet, as we know, when he's had those fights, he didn't look great. I mean, he didn't look great. I mean, like I said, it's not to try to put him down, but it's skill-wise, I don't believe that his style, not to say his skills, I will say his style, I don't think that his style matches up well with a guy like Deontay Wilder, because Deontay Wilder, The only way I could see somebody beating him is to make Deontay Wilder get in a dog fight with him. But that ain't Deontay Wilder's style. At this point in the game, he got so much experience. And then if you study your opponent, if you believe in your people, and your people like Mark Breland studying fights, they know that's the wrong fight to try to win. Because if he tries to fight anything other than being a boxer, then he would probably lose.
Now, let's talk about a guy that we kind of have a difference of opinion of, but yet still, he's going to be fighting Mr. Deontay Wilder next, and that's Mr. Dominic Brazil. Now, I've always said that I thought he was probably too slow and takes too much punishment to get in the ring with a guy like Deontay Wilder. Layman, if there are such a things, can you give me the keys to victory to a Dominic Brazil victory?
Well, you know, man, I'm going to say this much, okay? I don't know where Dominic stands in terms of his skills, his conditioning, his mindset, even his experience. I know he got a little experience now, but I just don't see him beating a guy like Deontay Wilder, who he has a tailwind right now. He's on top of the world when a man feels good about himself. It's hard to beat a guy like that. And I would say that I believe that Dominic has a puncher's chance. I would say if Dominic is able to make a guy like Wilder make a mistake, overlook him, then he would have a chance. But I would hope that with all the experience that Wilder now has, he wouldn't make that mistake. I would hope that he wouldn't overlook Dominic. You know, I would hope that he wouldn't take him lightly, which I don't think that he would. I think that he likes this attention that he's getting. I think he likes the standing of the feeling of knowing that when he goes to sleep and wake up, he's a world heavyweight champion, and that means something. I think he wants to hold on to that. And I just don't see Brazil winning. But I will say, you know, it's his boxing, and it's the heavyweight division. So Dominic always has a puncher's chance. But I just hope that, you know, Wilder will go out there and he'll fight smart, and he'll get some rounds in, and he'll get a little more experience, and he'll do what he has to do to keep his world title.
I see that the professor is here tonight. Jabron, how we doing?
Doing well. Just sorry getting in a little late. Was vacationing with the family. What's going on?
Yeah, as I was mentioning earlier, Scully wasn't here because he's celebrating his wedding anniversary as well as his birthday. So, always glad to see everybody taking care of family, doing family business. Jabron, we were talking about Mr. Luis Ortiz, his victory. Talking about whether or not we thought that, or whether I thought he would get another shot at the title, considering that 2019 seems to be a little booked up, so that would make him 40. Do you want to chime in on any of the heavyweight stuff before we kind of move on?
Oh, sure. It was some great action this weekend. Champ, did you get to see the heavyweight action this weekend?
I did, but I didn't get to see the Dillon White fight.
Oh, but did you see the Takum fight?
No, I did not.
Classic fight. Classic. It was a classic fight. Takum versus Derek Chisora. Upset him late. Oh, man, it was a classic fight. Chisora was losing majority of the fight. And Takum was, hitting him with combinations and big bombs. Chisora caught him with a Hail Mary and knocked him out late. And once again, he's back in the picture.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a slugfest. And the Dillian White fight also, like I said on previous shows, that Dillian has that dog in him, you know. When it's going to get tough, he's willing to lay it out all on the line, even if it's going out on his shield. So as I was coming in, I was hearing you talk about Deontay Wilder, and as I was driving up from the Poconos, I was getting some information on Deontay Wilder, and it seems Eddie Hearns has slipped him a new contract, and it's not for for Anthony Joshua. It seems that he's offering him about $7-8 million for Dillian White before the end of this year in the U.S. So it sounds like he's trying to get Deontay Wilder on the zone.
That's deep, man. And I think that by him trying to bring Joshua here, I think that what he's trying to do is he's
No. Deontay Wilder fighting Dillian White here.
Oh,
for $7 to $8 million. And
really?
And yes, November, December.
Oh.
But here's the thing. Once again, you're offering Deontay Wilder $7 or $8 million, and you, Anthony Joshua, is making 20 to 25.
All right, but Joshua has a profile. Joshua is he's a brand, right? You know, so that's what he's supposed to get. Deontay Wilder isn't a brand yet. Yes, his profile has advanced in the last 9 months. I mean, drastically. But he hasn't gotten there yet. So going from making what he makes per fight, $7-8 million, he better jump on that because it's a winnable fight. I'm not saying he's going to walk through Dillian White. I feel it'll be a good action-packed fight. But overall, I feel he has the tools to beat Dillian White, and why not get that payday and get a step closer to Joshua while getting them pockets fatter and becoming popular, because you don't think Dillian White fans is not going to come and support the UK fans, not going to come over and travel. He might not be big as Joshua, but I would suggest a good at least 5,000 to 10,000 would come over and support Dillian White from the UK. And they'll be tuned in over in the UK. So definitely that's more eyes on Deontay, and it builds the profile for the bigger fight.
And once again, it takes Luis Ortiz out of the picture.
Well, not necessarily, because we have somebody else that made a big upset this weekend that Eddie Hearn can quickly slide in there to and that's, I'm talking of Derek Chisora. Eddie Hearn will feed him to Luis Ortiz. You know that he going into the fight, the build up. You know, Chisora, he likes to talk smack and get in your face and do antics. Yeah, you know, drama. People love drama. And he lays it all out on the line in the fight. No matter how bad of shape he might come into the fight, he's going to go out on the shell. You know, that's what always gives him a chance of pulling off an upset, because he does take chances. So Eddie Hearn could easily slide Luis Ortiz a little bit of that the zone money.
Champ?
Man, I the professor has spoken. That's all I can say.
So the heavyweight division, and this is great for the heavyweight division that this has happened. You know, because, you know, Eddie Hearn is doing business with Joseph Parker and his team. Hey, that could be a rebound fight for Joseph Parker. Put him in there with Chisora. You know, he's taking two losses back-to-back. Put him in there with an aging Chisora, somebody who's going to, you know, still bring some action to the fight. And look, man, Eddie, hey, you got to give it to Eddie right now. He's getting the ball rolling.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely on. It's his turn. I'll just put it like that, you know. But I just hope that he does not ruin the opportunity for these two to fight, man. Because, you know, you're putting him in some dangerous fights. Just like this fight he got coming up with Povetkin. That's a dangerous fight. And then what?
Well, hey, if Joshua end up losing and Povetkin win, hey, Deontay been wanting to get Povetkin for a long time anyway. So, you know, and he could still get to Joshua. Joshua's still young. They still could make the fight. I just think that it's great that the heavyweight division is starting to heat up and that there's friction there. You know, Tyson Fury is back in the picture there. You know, looking phenomenal shape. You know, got another tune-up fight coming up, and he's getting back in the picture. You can't forget Deontay Wilder can get that fight also.
Yeah, that's true. But I just think that the people really want to see, you know, a fight with Joshua. I want to ask you a question, man. How good is that dude, Baby Miller? I've never really seen him fight, so I don't know. Like, how much of a contender is he really? Or how do you think he has a chance to be a world title holder?
Yeah, I think he could be a world title holder now to be undisputed. Now, that I don't think he could be undisputed, but to grab one of the titles, sure, why not? You know, I would give him a good chance. He's a pressure fighter, very active. But, you know, I want to see how he reacts to a big power puncher. I really haven't seen him being hit by, like, you know, he haven't been in there with, like, really heavy hitters. I want to see him get a hit by Deontay or the likes of Luis Ortiz or Joshua. I want to see how he reacts to those punches because he eats punches very well. I mean, you know, he's to be big, he's pretty slick, you know. Ain't going to say James Toney slick, but he's very crafty to be that big. You wouldn't think that a guy like that is, you know, pretty light on his feet and has a high activity rate as he does to be 300 pounds.
Oh, wow, he's 300 pounds? How tall is he?
Baby is like 6'3", 6'4".
Wow. Is he quick? Is he slow?
I mean, his hands are pretty fast. I wouldn't say he has the fastest feet, but his hands are pretty decent.
Does he, does he fight softball or is he conventional?
Nah, he's conventional.
Wow. I got to pull up some fights on him, man. I just wonder, you know, because it's like you got a lot of up-and-coming heavyweights, but nobody outside of, like, really Deontay's really been able to pull themselves up, you know, separate themselves from everybody else in this country. And I was just wondering, like, what other heavyweights do you think or do you know of any heavyweights that, you know, we could possibly tell the fans to watch out for in the future?
Well, right now, to be honest with you, it's a little more over in the, like, across the pond as far as the heavyweights. They got a couple of young guys that's coming up the ranks across the pond. They're starting to get buzzed. But in the U.S., me personally, I don't know of any, like, that really stick out or stand out, you know. Maybe we see what Deontay Wilder brother does. You know, he just had his first professional fight, so we'll keep our eye on him. And but right now it seems like the lower weight classes in the U.S. is a little more popular and sustainable than the heavier weights.
Yeah, our heavyweight class is once you leave the top, there's a big gap in between. I think we were looking at the development of a lot of our amateurs to see who was going to, you know, kind of step up and really, distinguish themselves. But
Think about it. You're a heavyweight, right? Most heavyweights are at least, what, 220 pounds, a heavyweight? And we're looking at around the average about, what, 6'3" on a heavyweight? Now, you look at it. I can go out here and get a guaranteed contract in an NBA or baseball or, you know, hockey, you know, all these other sports that you get guaranteed contracts. You don't think a lot of those big guys, instead of getting knocked upside the head, or rather, you know, maybe throwing some equipment and running to somebody, and you know, even if they don't play but 2-3 seasons, they got a couple million in the bank. So in those heavy weight classes, you're going to take those chances like that in today's age. Not saying back in the day, but in this modern day, the money that's out there, and all the you got all these agents that's recruiting these guys in middle school and high school. So bigger guys, you know, going to probably go to other sports.
Yeah, we have eighth graders that are all already signing commitments to college football teams. So, you know, I understand where you're coming from there. Guys, I got my play the crow here in front of me. I'll talk about that next. But a young prospect from Texas, we've had him on the show a few times, and I'm talking about Mr. Mario Barrios. What did you think of his performance?
He went in there and did what he had to do, you know, let his hands go. I didn't get to see the whole fight. I saw clips of the fight because, like I said, I was vacationing. But, you know, I'm happy that he got the win. And, you know, looked at social media today and, you know, he's buzzing. So maybe he has some bigger things than within the next 6 to 8 months down the road.
Well, you know, Virgil back in the corner. Go ahead, Lamy.
Yeah, he had too much experience. I was just saying that he had too much experience for that guy. The guy he fought, you know, he had a typical, you know, typical Hispanic style. It was nothing really great about him that he was bringing to the table, and you know, as a result, you know, he's a gatekeeper, so to speak. You know, he fought a good fight from the standpoint of his heart, but he didn't show a whole lot of skills. He just showed that he was tough, he was in shape, and he came to fight.
And as I said, it was good to see Virgil back in the corner after his hospitalization see him. I think he has another fight scheduled on the 4th. I think one of his fighters are fighting. Then the next Tuesday, he'll be on the Pugilist Corner with us. Mr. Easter got ate up by Mikey Garcia. I have to say, though, I don't think Easter came in there prepared to fight. It looked like he came in there prepared not to lose, and it didn't suit him well. You can't fight Mikey Garcia one-handed. I think I threw more right hands at the TV than he threw it at Mikey Garcia. I'm starting to think, and you know, we've seen two fighters now, Adrian Broner and now Robert Easter, that have been invited into the Cunningham camp with Adrian and Gervonta. Adrian, Mike Stafford sent me a little note after the fight saying that he didn't see where Adrian had changed that much under Cunningham, and that he thought that Adrian would have fought the same fight under his tutelage. Now, I'm not really pointing at Cunningham himself, but I am pointing at Adrian Broner. I think when you bring such negative vibes, and I'm not talking about his skill, but I'm talking about the aura around him, it seems like there's an underperformance. He doesn't bring that killer instinct, or I don't see what he adds to a fighter's repertoire or confidence. Now, I will admit I am very much, maybe overcritical of Adrian Broner, but I just think that when you have someone that doesn't seem to take his craft as serious and put it in a lifetime perspective, I don't really think it serves for him to try to mentor other boxers. And I think he gets into their psyche. Now, you know, well, Professor, we're going to come to you first. What did you think of Easter's performance? And what do you think of what I just said?
Well, I did see a little difference with Easter in certain spots of the fight, where before he still gave up his height a lot in the fight. But it was a lot of times he was doing the up and down with the jab, where before he would just pause with the jab. I seen him pivoting and actually trying to stab with the jab, like punch, instead of just tapping him, like actually punch through the target. When he was going up and down, he was being successful when he was doing that. But he wasn't following up with the right. You know, he was controlling the distance when he was doing that, making Mikey have to sit there and be patient to try to pick his spots to go in, you know. And I will give it to him. It seemed like it took for him to have to face adversity for, like, the dog to try to come out in him. You know, I didn't see any type of urgency until he got dropped. And then he started to have some urgency come out. But great sportsmanship after the fight. You know, he gave Mikey Garcia his well-due respect. And, you know, he made no excuses about his performance. He was outclassed, and two true champions face each other. So I give it to both fighters. And as far as Mikey Garcia, I think it was a good performance, but I don't think it was a performance that would build any type of momentum towards this Errol Spence money grab type of fight that the media and everybody is trying to get people to buy into, but I'm not buying it.
Yeah.
Well, you know, man, my take on a fight is just Mikey Garcia was the better man. And I told you guys last week when you asked me who I think was going to win, I said it's going to be hard to call. It's going to be hard for me to say. I told you I was leaning toward Mikey Garcia because I traveled the world with his father when he was training Fernando Vargas. We know he comes from a pedigree of fighters as well. So I kind of was leaning most definitely toward Mikey Garcia because, you know, we Cali boys. But at the same time, I know Robert Jr. is a great fighter, and he's a proven champion. But, you know, he fought a better fighter that night. And I thought that there were things that he could have done in that fight to really make himself a lot more effective. But he didn't do it. And maybe he'll go back and look at the tape, and we'll see a better Robert Easter Jr. because a loss isn't a loss. You only lose when you stop trying. I mean, no, he don't have the title, but it ain't nothing he couldn't get back because he fought a real good fight, and I think that everybody definitely got their money's worth. So I'm looking forward to seeing the new Robert Easter Jr. stepping back into the ring to see what he found out about himself and what he was able to improve on is going to make him an even better fighter. So that's what I think.
You got to speak to the psyche. What do you think when you know, about the aura in the gym, about, you know, how much that plays into the success of a championship fighter?
So you're asking me how much does the training go into being a champion?
No. Come on now. You ain't going to get away from this one politically correct.
Not at all.
I'm asking you, when you're a champion, does it make a difference for the psychological feel of your gym? When you're walking in every day knowing that you're a champion, you're walking in every day watching the young kids giving you admiring looks and wanting to be like you. When you walk in and you and your trainer hug and say, "What's up, champ?" Come on now, you can't tell me that doesn't make a difference.
Of course it makes a difference. It definitely makes a difference at the end of the day. But at the end of the day, the only thing that should matter is what did you get into boxing for? Because the only time something can matter to you is if it matters to you. You know what I mean? Like for instance, if it never mattered, like me, for instance, perfect example. I didn't necessarily care about how much money I was making. I just wanted to fight. I wanted to become heavyweight champion of the world. And I didn't necessarily care about what people thought of me. Yeah, it made me feel good when I won the title for everybody to congratulate me and all that, but that's the downside. I mean, that's the going downhill. That's the easy part. You know, the hard part is getting your title and keeping your title. So at the same time, yeah, you know, when people have expectations of you, that makes you have a greater expectation of yourself. I hope I'll answer that correctly.
Well, are you telling me that, you know, I understand about the financial and I understand about other people, but you can't tell me that psychologically, you know, knowing that you were heavyweight champion of the world, you know, you didn't have a little more swag. You didn't have that little extra pep in your step. You know, when you looked in the mirror, you know, you had that little extra swell in your chest. Come on, champ.
Nah, man. Well, see, you asking the wrong person because I am probably the most humble person that you will ever meet that ever held a world heavyweight title because I never even wanted to carry my ring. Like, if you ever watch any of my fights, if you ever watch any of my career, you never ever saw me with my belt outside of the ring because I never ever wanted people to think that I need you to see that, oh, I'm the champ and praise me for that. So that's why I never, unless I'm going to speak to some kids, you'll never see me with my title. Now, you might see me with my ring, but that's just so I can feel good. But, you know, as far as that go, man, what I want to be known in the ring as was the thing that matters the most to me, not how people perceive me. I didn't even care. That's why I didn't matter what people, like when I fought Vladimir and, you know, I'm an 8-1 underdog, even though I'm number one contender in the world and, my amateur record, none of that mattered. Only mattered, only thing mattered was that I was going to get to fight for the title. It didn't matter who it was.
But you know, one of the key phrases is, you know, I wore my ring because it made me feel good. And that's the part that I'm trying to get at, that, you know, that as a person, you know, you have to have a great amount of self-investment, you know, and when that investment pays off, you know, you might not necessarily want to shout it to the world, but, you know, it does make you feel good. Jabron.
Absolutely.
Jabron, you want to kind of, you know, expand on that, or do you, you know, buy into that particular analogy?
Yeah, but my question would be to you, JK. Are you speaking in general, or are you talking about the Robert Easter, Adrian Broner situation?
I'm talking about the Robert Easter, Adrian Broner situation. And you know, the possible cause and effect.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on the person personality, like in the sense where I don't know Robert Easter's personality like that. He don't show his personality out that much, like on social media. You don't hear him getting into drama and stuff like that. So I can't speak on his personality, but Adrian Broner, he's a person that he likes his ego to be stroked, you know? So it's like, if he's in that type of environment, is he stroking his ego, you know? They supposed to be like brothers, you know, and that's the type of people he want around him, is people who will stroke his ego.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I can see where, you know, it would be advantageous to Adrian, just not so much Robert. But let's see. Jabron, first of all, let's go to you. You always bring us the latest news in the sport. So what's going on? Do we have any important ladies things coming up? We're going to have Melissa on next Sunday. So what's going on within this great sport of ours, Jabron?
Well, it seems that boxing is just really heating up all over the place. I mean, you have Uncle Al and Showtime and Fox getting together and putting on these great matches and these cards, because we got Devin Alexander versus Berto on the card, and you got Charles Martin coming back fighting Kawaki, the heavyweight from Brooklyn. You know, you got Sergio Kovalev fighting Elder Alvarez here, Atlantic City, August 4th. Was that's this weekend coming? Wow, right around the corner. Yeah, right around the corner. You got Carl Frampton across the pond back in action. On that same card will be Tyson Fury. Man, we're loaded. We start September with a bang with Danny Garcia versus Sean Showtime Porter. And then followed up by Canelo Alvarez and Triple G, and then followed up by Joshua and Povetkin. So, I mean, the fights just keep coming. You got Boo Boo coming home to Providence to fight Billy Joe Saunders on DAZN in his own backyard. I give Billy Joe Saunders props for once again coming across the pond and putting a belt on the line. So it's a fight that I didn't think that would get made, to be honest with you. So I will admit to that. And we got Big Baby Miller fighting Spilka in Chicago on the card. And Jesse Vargas is supposed to be headlining that card also. That'll be on DAZN coming up here in September. So is he enough, fellas?
Yes, sir. And as always, we know that you have your finger right there on the pulse. So, Camp, we've had one of your guys on the show last Tuesday. What's going on in Naptown?
Well, Four Champs Promotions is getting ready to actually put on another good boxing match next month. I believe it's, I can't remember the exact date, but around the 25th. And, you know, it's just, as always, these guys are always just trying to bring out the people from the Midwest, trying to get that boxing going again. I think they got a deal on the table with, who was that? They, I think Caesar's Palace, because I think they have a Caesar's Palace hotel. I think it's east, like Richmond, Indiana. And, you know, that's right on the border of Indiana, Ohio. And, you know, it should be a really good show because you got a lot of fighters from Illinois. You got a lot of fighters from Ohio, Michigan, and Louisville, as well as Indiana, that would be trying to get on this card, which I'm sure they already have made. But I try to, you know, I work for Al Heyman, so I stay out the way. And if they need some advice, I try to lend it to them. But you're going to see some really big fights coming because, you know, there's been talks about having Antonio Tarver bring his son and join this Midwest circuit. And even got a call from oh, my gosh, come on, Brain. Hector Camacho Jr., you know, so that he may even want to have a you know, not that he needs the money, not that he's trying to win the title, but, you know, he still got the love, and he said his legs are still there. So, you know, we may be having some exciting fights lining up here in the Midwest soon.
All right, guys. Well, hey, as usual, time always flies when we're having fun. So let's start with you, Champ. Why don't you give everybody your final thoughts for the evening and tell everybody where they can find you on social media. You mentioned the events coming up. So your final thoughts and social media addresses.
Yeah, well, hey, man, as always, I'm Relentless Damon Brewster, and it's always a pleasure to be on the show with you guys, man. I always value your opinion. I love the fact that we can agree to disagree as men and educate each other and, you know, crack a joke every now and then, you know, and even hit on some serious matters that, you know, people need to hear about sometimes. And I appreciate that, man. And I just want to say to all the people, continue to support boxing, man, because at the end of the day, these kids out here, whether you like this sport or not, they could either be in the gym or be on TV, or they could be in your car or be in your home. So pick your poison. You know, these kids, everybody's not college material. Some people are pure warriors. Layman Brewster is a pure warrior. I was not college material. That ain't to say I couldn't have went to school, but instead of going to school to work for somebody, I went to the School of Hard Knocks to work for myself, to be my own owner, my own boss. And through me doing that, I was able to help a lot of other people that was to, explore their dream of being wrapped up in boxing. So I'm Relentless Layman Brewster. You can follow me on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook at layman.brewster at yahoo.com or just Layman Brewster. Thank you as always, guys. Appreciate you.
All right, champ. Look forward to talking to you next week or at your next availability. DeBron, hey, man, glad to see that you had a good time with the family. Always glad to hear about your family trips and whatnot. So tell everybody where they can find you and any final words that you have for our listeners.
Well, thank you as always, JK, and thank the listeners for listening in, and thank the champ as always. And thanks, Scully. Happy birthday, Scully, and happy anniversary. And keep supporting boxing, please, fans. Keep supporting it. You can find me on Facebook. I'm Jabron, J-A-B-R-A-N, Clemon, C-L-E-M-O-N. That's on Facebook. Let them know where they can find you at, J.K.
Yeah, you can always find me on Facebook at the Pugilist Corner. You can check me out. I was on Facebook at James King. Also, don't forget to check out our webpage, thepugilistcorner.com. That's thepugilistcorner, thepugilistcorner.com. Check out our website. You can catch all our archived shows on the Weekend Wrap, as well as our Tuesday show, The Pugilist Corner. So have a great night, everyone. I look forward to talking to you again next week. Ooh.